Welcome to Torah Imecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Rachel Gans, and today we will be studying Sefer Ezra, Perek Vav, Chapter 6. In this perek, the camera pans, so to speak, from Yerushalayim to Persia. We left off in Perek Hay, Chapter 5, with Tatnai's letter to King Daryavish requesting that the king search the royal archives for a copy of the Cyrus Proclamation to verify that the Jews have the right to build the Beit HaMikdash in Yerushalayim. Now, in Perek Vav, we learn of Daryavish's response. This perek is still in Aramaic, since Sefer Ezra is quoting official Persian documents in their original language, and so I'm going to read the psukim again in English translation. Pasuk Aleph, verse 1. Thereupon, at the order of King Darius, they searched the archives where the treasures were stored in Babylon. But it was in the citadel of Ecbatana, in the province of Media, that a scroll was found. An archived copy of the Cyrus Proclamation is eventually found in the summer residence of the Persian kings in Ecbatana. Sefer Ezra quotes this document in full. Pasuk Gimel, verse 3. In the first year of King Cyrus, issued an order concerning the house of God in Yerushalayim. Let the house be rebuilt, a place for offering sacrifices, with a base built up high. Let it be 60 cubits high and 60 cubits wide, with three courses of great stones and one course of timber. The expenses shall be paid by the palace, and the gold and silver vessels of the house of God, which Nebuchadnezzar had taken away from the temple in Jerusalem and transported to Babylon, shall be returned, and let each go back to the temple in Jerusalem where it belongs. You shall deposit it in the house of God. This version of the Cyrus Proclamation, discovered in the Persian royal archives, differs in certain respects from the version that's presented in Ezra Perek Aleph, Chapter 1. Though both versions grant permission to rebuild the Beit HaMikdash, here in Perek Vav, Chapter 6, there's no mention of the Jews returning from exile back to Yehuda, by contrast with Perek Aleph, Chapter 1. Another point of contrast is that in Perek Vav, the proclamation lists the dimensions and building materials of the temple with great specificity. It declares the provision of public funds to cover the building costs and authorizes the release of the temple vessels to be returned to Yerushalayim. These details are absent from the text of the Cyrus Proclamation in Perek Aleph. The divergence of these two versions can be explained by their differing purposes. The proclamation in Perek Aleph, Chapter 1, was an oral announcement to the Jewish people in Bavel, emphasizing their freedom to go back home and rebuild their temple. The proclamation in Perek Vav, Chapter 6, is the legal documentation of this decree, with all of the financial and technical details itemized and filed away in the royal archives. Daryavish now sends word back to Tatnai. Pasuk Vav, verse 6. Now you, Tatnai, governor of the province of beyond the river, Shtarbaznai and colleagues, the officials of the province of beyond the river, stay away from that place. Allow the work of this house of God to go on. Let the governor of the Jews and the elders of the Jews rebuild this house of God on its site. Daryavish vindicates the Jews' claim that Koresh had granted them permission to build, and orders Tatnai the governor not to interfere with the construction of the Beit HaMikdash. But Daryavish goes even a step further. Pasuk Chet, verse 8. And I hereby issue an order concerning what you must do to help these elders of the Jews rebuild this house of God. The expenses are to be paid to these men with dispatch, out of the resources of the king, derived from the taxes of the province of beyond the river, so that the work not be stopped. Not only does Daryavish prohibit any harassment of the Jews or interference with their building project, he actually orders Tatnai to assist them by diverting tax dollars to fund the temple construction. In Pasuk Tet, verse 9, Daryavish promises further funds for the daily upkeep of the Beit HaMikdash and its requisite sacrifices. Why is Daryavish being so generous? The end of Pasuk Yud, verse 10, provides the answer. So that they may offer pleasing sacrifices to the God of heaven and pray for the life of the king and his sons. Daryavish is a cosmopolitan pagan. He wants to cover all his bases, honoring any and all gods in order to secure the longevity and stability of his reign. In exchange for his generous support, Daryavish expects the Jews to sacrifice and pray to Hashem on his behalf. Assuming that the Jews complied, Professor Mordechai Zer Kavod in the Da'at Mikra commentary notes that this is an early source, along with the pasuk in Yirmiyahu, for the Jewish practice of reciting a prayer on behalf of the government in shul, something that's common until today. Daryavish concludes his letter to Tatnai by adding some teeth to his orders. Pasuk Yud, verse 10. I also issue an order that whoever alters this decree shall have a beam removed from his house, and he shall be impaled on it and his house destroyed. And may the God who established his name there cause the downfall of any king or nation that undertakes to alter or damage that house of God in Jerusalem. I, Darius, have issued the decree. Let it be done diligently. Daryavish warns that anyone who violates his instructions will suffer severe punishment and invokes Hashem's name to curse those who try to damage the Beit HaMikdash, even in the future after his own reign. With that, Daryavish sends off this letter to Tatnai. Upon receiving it, Tatnai obligingly follows through on all of the king's instructions, and the Jews are heartened by the Persian support. With the finish line in sight, the people redouble their efforts to complete the building. Pasuk Yud Dalit, verse 14. So the elders of the Jews progressed in the building under the prophesying of Haggai the prophet and Zechariah son of Iddo, and they completed the building according to the command of the God of Israel and the decree of Cyrus and Darius and Artaxerxes the king of Persia. Sefer Ezra tells us that the command of God directed the people to build. That statement in Pasuk Yud Dalet is sandwiched between mention of the prophets, Haggai and Zechariah, and mention of the Persian kings who permitted and assisted in the building. During the period of Shivat Zion, both the prophets and the Persian kings purvey the command of God. God's will is communicated explicitly by these last few prophets in Jewish history, and, as Sefer Ezra argues, by recognizing the hand of Hashem behind Persian politics. Koresh and Daryavish are given credit for their part in bringing the Beit HaMikdash to completion, and King Artaxerxes is mentioned here as well, even though he reigns later, because he will assist the people in repairing the walls of Yerushalayim in the times of Nehemiah. Pasuk Tetvav, verse 15. So this house was completed on the third day of the month of Adar, in the sixth year of the reign of King Darius. Recall that work on the Beit HaMikdash restarted in the second year of Daryavish's reign, and was completed, we're being told, in the sixth year of his reign. After 4.5 years of building, Bayit Sheni is finally finished on the third of Adar. The people rejoice. Pasuk Tet Zion, verse 16. The Israelites, the priests, and the Levites, and all the other exiles celebrated the dedication of the house of God with joy, and they sacrificed for the dedication of this house of God 100 bulls, 200 rams, 400 lambs, and 12 goats as a purification offering for all of Israel, according to the number of the tribes of Israel. They appointed the priests in their courses and the Levites in their divisions for the service of God in Yerushalayim, according to the prescription in the Book of Moshe. The entire community comes together to celebrate the inauguration of Bayit Sheni. Hundreds of sacrifices are brought in celebration, and Sefer Ezra highlights the 12 goats offered, 12 for the 12 tribes of Israel. This is a poignant choice. After all, by this point in history, 10 of those tribes have been lost, swallowed up by the Assyrian Empire in the 8th century. Yet, the two tribes that remain slaughter 12 goats anyway, understanding themselves as representatives of the entire Jewish people, wherever they may be. The Jews get Bayit Sheni up and running. They assign Kohanim, priests, and Levim, Levites, to their prescribed roles in the Beit HaMikdash service, according to the laws of the Torah. It's worth noting that Bayit Sheni is missing key elements that were present in the first Beit HaMikdash, things as fundamental as the Aron, the miraculous fire that would descend on the altar, and any visible manifestation of the Shekhinah, God's presence. Nevertheless, the Jews of Shivat Zion are celebrating the Beit HaMikdash that they do have. Remember that at the groundbreaking of Bayit Sheni in chapter 3, Perek Gimel, some elders were crying at the bittersweet reality of Shivat Zion. But now, in Perek Vav, chapter 6, there are no tears in sight. The Jews of Shivat Zion have learned to embrace and celebrate their partial redemption, imperfect and incomplete as it may be. The Beit HaMikdash is completed in Adar, and the very next month, Nisan, brings the holiday of Pesach. The Perek ends by describing this incredible Pesach, the first holiday that the Jews celebrate in the new Beit HaMikdash. To highlight this return, Sefer Ezra switches back to Hebrew, the language of home. Pasuk Yud Tet, verse 19, Vaya'asu b'nei ha'golah et ha'pesach, Arba'a Asar Lachodesh Harishon. The exiles celebrated the Passover on the 14th day of the first month. Kihi Taharu HaKohanim BaHalevim KeEchad Kulam Tehorim. For the priests and Levites had purified themselves together; they were all pure. VaYishchatu HaPesach LaKol Bnei Hagola VeLaAcheihem HaKohanim VeLahem. They slaughtered the Pesach offering for all the exiles and for their brothers, the priests, and for themselves. Sefer Ezra calls the people B'nai HaGolah, the exiles, which is striking, given that these are actually the Jews that have returned from exile. Yet that is exactly the point. Pesach is the holiday of redemption, when the nation of Israel went from slavery to freedom. The Jews celebrating this holiday are also celebrating their own redemption, their own transformation, returning from exile back home. Perhaps that is why they are called at first B'nai HaGolah in Psukim Yud Tet through Chaf 19 and 20. But listen to how they are described in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21, as they partake in the Pesach sacrifice. Vayochlu B'nai Yisrael Hashavim Me HaGolah, the children of Israel who had returned from the exile. They go from being B'nai HaGolah, the exiles, to B'nai Yisrael HaShavim MeHaGolah, the Jews who have returned from exile. That Pesach, they celebrate the exodus from Egypt and their own exodus, Shivat Zion, as well. Sefer Ezra makes sure to note in Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21, that the Jews welcomed converts, sincere ones, to sacrifice the Pesach offering along with them. Pasuk Chaf Aleph, verse 21, Vayochlu b'nei Yisrael ha'shavim me'hagolah v'chol ha'nevdal me'tum'at goyei ha'aretz aleihem. The children of Israel who had returned from the exile, together with all those who joined them in separating themselves from the impurity of the nations of the lands, lidrosh la'Hashem Elokei Yisrael, to worship the Lord Hashem of Israel, eight of it, the sacrifice. This line is important, because it contrasts with the unpleasantness between the people of Shomron, the Kutim, and Zerubbabel back in Perek Dalet, chapter 4. Back then, those people were turned away and refused entry into the community of Israel. Yet this was not due to their ethnic differences, but rather due to a fundamental difference in religious belief, specifically their willingness to serve other gods in addition to Hashem. Proof that this wasn't just xenophobia is right here in Perek Vav, chapter 6, where Sefer Ezra tells us that the Jewish community welcomes a group of sincere converts who are prepared to wholly serve Hashem, the God of Israel. The final pasuk of our perek, verse 22, pasuk Chaf Bet, sums up not just chapter 6, but the entirety of Sefer Ezra up until this point. In fact, the first six prakim of Sefer Ezra are kind of like Act 1 of the book, focused on the people's initial return back to Yehuda and their efforts to build Bayit Sheni, the second temple. This act now comes to a close. Pasuk Chaf Bet, verse 22, Ve'yasu chag hamatzot shivat yamim b'simcha. They joyfully celebrated the festival of matzot, referring to Pesach, for 7 days. Ki simcham Hashem, for Hashem had made them glad, v'heisev lev melech Ashur alehem, by inclining the heart of the Assyrian king towards them. L'chazek yedehem b'melechet beit ha'elokim elokei Yisrael, so that he supported them in the work of the house of God, the God of Israel. The Jews recognize that the support from the Persian kings was instrumental in enabling them to complete Bayit Sheni. But they recognize as well that, as the verse in Mishlei states, Lev Melachim Biyad Hashem, the heart of kings is in Hashem's hands. And they recognize the hand of God behind every Persian decree and letter that facilitated their success. Ultimately, it is their recognition of Hashem's presence and assistance, often hidden and indirect, but always there, that is their cause for joy. This shir is dedicated Lezecher Nishmas Marcy Stern, Mensha Yehudis Bas Gedalyahu. She was a dedicated teacher whose deep love of the Sifrei Neviim and Shivat Zion left an indelible mark on her many students.